My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Keller. He's the founding pastor at Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City. He is the author of numerous books, and the most recent is Making Sense of God, An Invitation to the Skeptical. And Dr. Keller, it's great to have you with us again. Thank you, sir.
I'm glad to be with you again.
One of the things you talk about, and there's obviously many in this book, is the perception that secularism is on the rise and religion is on the wane in the country. We certainly see the surveys where those who don't declare any religious affiliation is on the rise. So talk a little bit about what you think is responsible for that and why it doesn't worry you when you look at the big picture.
Right. Well, what's responsible for that is very complicated. Actually, even though I really am not seriously suggesting to the readers that you read the 900-page book by Charles Taylor on a secular age, he tries to explain why we've gone more secular, and the answer is it's very complicated. Some of it's got to be the failure of the Christian church. It has to be. We cannot possibly imagine that Christianity would be declining without failures on our part, failures to live a godly Christian life and all that sort of thing. But there are also a lot of other factors. There are people who really resent the church, and they want the church out of public life, and they are doing everything they possibly can to marginalize the church. So it's complicated. However, the reason I don't feel too bad in the long run is because while parts of Western Europe and America will be more secular in the future, overall, studies have shown that religion is growing faster than the population. So a higher and higher percentage of people in the world will be religious, and therefore the future is not secular.
For those people who state that they don't have any particular religious affiliation, to what extent is their non-belief a religion in and of itself?
It's absolutely another belief, not just to an extent. I should say this. We all use faith and reason to get to our position. If you don't believe in God, you can't prove there's no God. You use reason, but you also use a certain amount of faith to get there, because nobody can prove there's no God, finally, to all rational people. But then to believe there is a God, you can't prove that. It takes faith and reason to get there. To believe that we ought to work for the equality of all people because human rights are important, you can't prove that human rights exist. You can't prove that all people are equal. That's faith. And so if that's what you're living for, that's a combination of faith and reason. So what I try to say in the very beginning of the book is I try to level the playing field. And I say, don't say that Christians have to prove their faith beliefs when everybody is basing their life on faith beliefs. And nobody can prove demonstrably to everyone else their faith beliefs. And so what we need to do is admit that we all come to our positions on the basis of both faith and reason, and then compare them. Compare them. Which of them makes the most sense of our lives? Which of them helps us get meaning and satisfaction and identity and hope the best? Which of them makes sense of what we see in the world? We compare them, and they're all equally sets of beliefs.
You lead me right to the next point that I was going to make from your book, and that's while people who claim that they don't want any affiliation think they're somehow liberated, there's a crisis of meaninglessness out there, and you talk about that in a chapter and the importance and the difference and the distinction of discovered meaning and why that's essential to explain, to understanding why we're here and who God is.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's right for Christians to say to somebody, well, without God, you have no meaning in life. They'll say, I do have meaning. I live for my grandchildren, or I live to make the world a better place, and that's real meaning. And I actually try to say, yes, it is. But I say, is it as durable as meaning that you find in God, and will it help you face suffering? See, if my meaning in life, I have grandchildren too. If my meaning in life is my grandchildren and something happens to them, then I've lost all meaning in life and suffering destroys me. If my meaning in life is God and I lose my grandchildren or something happens like that, it would be devastating, but it wouldn't be the end of my life because it wouldn't be taking my meaning away. And I try to make in the case in the book that Christianity gives you a meaning that suffering can handle. I mean, that can handle suffering, excuse me. And whereas without that, your meaning, you know, the kind of created meaning, which you make yourself, rather than discovered meaning where you discover Christ, created meaning is not as durable, and it will not handle suffering.
And that then feeds into your identity, particularly as a believer in Christ. And I know we've only got a few minutes here, Pastor Keller, so when we get to the great equalizer, and that's death. Everybody's going to die unless the Lord comes back before then. How does that factor into the way most people look at the existence of God and the way they should look at the existence of God?
Death, you mean? Well, a couple years ago, I read a book by a French philosopher named Luc Ferry, who was an atheist. But here's what he said. He said, look, I don't believe in Christianity, but keep this in mind. I believe that when you die, you rot. So the one thing in your life that means the most, which is love, love relationships, when you die, they're gone. You know, you're taken away from your loved ones, or when they die, they're taken away from you. So he said, but Christianity believes that when you die, it actually enhances love. You have a perfect love relationship with God. You have a perfect love relationship with others forever. So he says, even though I don't believe it's true, he said, that's so attractive. He says, I don't know how you cannot at least see the attraction of Christianity. And I have to say, I think he's right. I mean, even if you don't believe it's true, you should at least wish it were true, because that's what he's saying. He's saying, I don't know how you don't wish Christianity were true, even though in the end I decided it wasn't. For people to say that Christianity is irrelevant is just, I think, unfair. Obviously, that would be a wonderful thing to be, to know that if I die, it's only going to enhance my love, the love I have around me. And I would think that you have to say, if you're a secular person, wow, that would be great.
Dr. Keller, then, of course, once we get through all that, and you may convince someone that, okay, there is evidence for God, and that definitely adds meaning to life, a discovered meaning and so forth, then where Christianity stands apart from all the others. Obviously, as you point out in the book, the resurrection makes it singular in that respect. But where do you point them spiritually then after a fairly long logical discussion?
Actually, I do think you kind of hinted at it. You got to get to know Jesus. Actually, Christianity is not a set of bullet point propositions. Ultimately, it's not a set of just doctrines. I mean, I'm not saying Christianity doesn't entail doctrines. Of course it does. Ultimately, it's taking you to a person and the story of his life that really happened. He came to earth. He died on the cross. And you need to actually read about him in the Gospels and start to feel the attraction of him. He is so unique. He is so different. His words are amazing. His attitude is amazing. And so you need to feel the attraction of that, because ultimately that's where you go after the logical. Basically, how do you say it? Christianity doesn't offer you a watertight argument. It offers you a watertight person, Jesus Christ, against whom in the end there can be no argument.
Last 30 seconds, sir. What's the best way for believers to engage the skeptical?
Patience. And make sure that you don't answer questions they're not asking. And make sure you find out where their objections are coming from, because there's a lot of different experiences they've had. And their experiences have had more to do with their doubts than probably the logic. So really be patient and really try to get behind and find out what they've been through and where their questions are coming from.
It's a fantastic just thumbnail sketch of this book. It's called Making Sense of God, An Invitation to the Skeptical. A lot of fantastic material. Dr. Keller, thanks very much for your time today, sir.
Thank you, and those questions were great. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, sir. Dr. Tim Keller, founding pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City. Again, the new book, Making Sense of God, An Invitation to the Skeptical. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.